Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Michael Steele podcast. Chris Emery, noted author, former White House usher, all around just a good guy. Welcome, man.
Michael, great to see you.
You were a White House usher, which is a job that a lot of people don't know exists.
Correct. Right?
Tell us about that part of your story, how you became an usher. What is a White House usher? Right. You know, and how does it all kind of weave itself in and out of the story of presidents?
Well, absolutely. And Michael, I realized this the other day, and I don't know what made me think of it, but I am a real White House insider.
Yes, you are.
More so than anybody else that says they are, which hopefully after this, everyone will understand why. But the usher's office is a very unique, rare office. It's inside the White House. It's been around for almost 200 years. And it is actually the management office for the White House, the home of the first family, and the 18 acres of grounds that surround the house. And the ushers are there to primarily make that building feel like a home to the first family, not an office and not a museum. Mm-hmm. The ushers, and I happen to be the 18th one in history, so they stay around for a while.
They stay around a while, yeah.
But I spent just over eight years in the White House. I worked for President Reagan, President H.W. Bush, and President Clinton. And I just had the most amazing job in the world. My job was to take care of the personal needs of the president and first family.
Right.
And the office, as I said, has been around for 200 years. The name usher really derived from pre-colonial England. The ushers were the men that took care of the great estates of the rich and famous people that lived in England at the time. So fast forward quite a while till when that was created. It was actually in the first floor plan of the White House in 1792, actually. There was something called the Porter's Lodge, which became the usher's office. Mm-hmm. And when I say I was the 18th, there were actually the 18th, that count starts from about 1845. So it's just an amazing job where we have a daily interaction with the first family. I get calls from the president for anything. It could be, cancel my trip to Camp David this weekend, or hey, you know what? I got the Baltimore Orioles. I want them to come play some, catch on the South grounds.
Right.
Set it up.
Make it happen.
But it's the most amazing job that really is, and there's not much written about it or known about it, because that's the privacy of the first family is paramount. And as far as ushers go, there have been three others that have written books. I happen to be the first one that's written two books. Mm-hmm. But in the history of the White House, it's a very close for security and for privacy reasons. There's not much known about the house.
What do you miss about those times? What do you miss about? I mean, moments like that obviously are profoundly compelling in how you see the worth of your work. And the appreciation of that work by the first family, because it is a very personal service that you provide.
It is
on behalf of the country. How do you what do you miss about it? And when you sit back and reflect on it now, what do you think about those times?
Well, I was so fortunate to be in situations where I get to witness things that no normal human gets to see. And I guess, Michael, I've spent many years in project management and all these things after the White House, and where you have these project deadlines, there's a lot of pressure. Well, at the White House, the pressure is immediate. The pressure is immediate when President Reagan calls me and says, General Scowcroft or General Crow is coming over and he needs an easel. Whenever Crow needed an easel, somebody was going to get bombed. So, but that's just a little example of how, immediate. You have to respond, and there's never a no to the president or a first lady. Right. Said we will get it done, and just having kind of being on edge like that is actually very invigorating. So I miss that. I miss being able to help, you know, make a difference. And it was kind of like, you know, I'm the guy in the shadows that
right.
gets things done. So
were there scary moments in those shadows? I mean, I can imagine the day Reagan was shot. Well, you were.
Yeah, fortunately, I'd not.
You were there after that.
Yeah.
You were there after that.
I think during the Gulf War, you know, we went 24/7. We were there all night. And I was taking situation room bulletins up to the president.
Right.
And when the Scuds started hitting, going towards Israel, remember the president, you know, this was 1990s. This is how far back the technology was. So I'm flipping from CNN in my office in the ushers. I'm flipping from CNN to CBS. I'm getting all the news.
Right.
And I'm upstairs talking to the president. He goes, "What's the latest report on the Scuds?" And I said, "Well, I can tell you what CNN and CBS are saying, because that's what I want to hear." So, I mean, the president's got his total security staff. He's got the Joint Chiefs. He's got the Pentagon. And he's asking me, "What's the latest on the Scuds?" But times like that were... It was tough because we were in a war situation. But what was really tough was seeing the price it took on the president. You know,
yeah.
I mean, he didn't sleep, and the toll, I should say, that it took on him. It was really, really difficult.
Are there any? So now you've got and I want to get, because I think it kind of sets up what you've done narratively with the new book.
Yeah.
Which is a wonderful murder mystery and you know, all the intrigue of, you know, dark, wet streets in Washington, D.C., which I want to get into. But and the reason I want to have this conversation first, because I think it animates what you write next in the new book. So folks knowing the intricate details and background and experiences inside the White House, it gives not just color, but texture to mm-hmm. the story in who killed the president.
Yeah.
So when you're looking at that time and you're writing for this time, what do you see as outdated now? I mean, things, protocols, procedures, you've mentioned the technology, you know, today we've got a cell phone that you could have said, "Well, Mr. President, here, take a look," right?
Right.
Then you were like, "Well, CNN said," and or you know, they just reported on ABC or CBS, because there was no MSNBC or no Fox and at that time.
Right.
What seems outdated to you when you look back on that now?
Well, that's an interesting question. Let me respond this way and see if this helps. The White House thrives on the unknown as far as the security of the complex and what the capabilities are. And in fact, I touch a little bit on that in this book, Who Killed the President. I think a lot of the technology's been improved, but some of the procedures haven't been.
Mm.
And I was standing next to, what was Clinton's Treasury Secretary from Texas?
He ran
for president. I was standing next to him after the plane that crashed. This was years ago. There was a plane, a kid crashed a plane into the White House.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was it Benson? No, it wasn't Benson. What was his name? But anyway, I'm standing next to the secretary. And at that time, this was before Homeland Security. So Treasury was in charge of the Secret Service.
Right.
And Lloyd.
Benson.
Yeah. Benson, I think.
All right.
So
Benson.
The press are yelling questions. "Mr. Secretary, how close did the White House come to launching their missiles, you know, anti-aircraft missiles?" And he said, "It was under consideration." And I'm looking at him and said, "Well, there ain't no missiles up there." Hey, there might be now. I was there a long time ago, but I'm saying
right. There are no missiles up there.
So my point is, and the Secret Service told me, it says, yeah, the outside, they just fear, they don't know our capabilities. And we thrive on that. Because
it really, a lot of that obviously changes after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so there are those elements and aspects of it that make it that much more intriguing, how we dealt with and existed with threats back then,
right,
in the late 80s, 90s, and how we exist and deal with those threats today.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
All right, America, you asked for it. Or maybe you didn't. But either way, we have to talk. You're just in kind of a crazy place right now, Mr. and Mrs. USA. So we're going to sit down a couple of times a week and work it out between us. The way Americans do. On a podcast. Hosted by Beowulf Rocklin. Weird name. Weird news. Weird politics. Weird country. Facepalm America. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.